Now, tensions between China and its closest neighbours dominated, well, much of the coverage of North Asia in 2013. An increasingly assertive China is locked in territorial disputes with Japan, South Korea, the Philippines, Vietnam and Cambodia, and analysts have warned that any of that could escalate into potentially armed conflict. But the acrimony hit a new peak in December with Beijing's move to create a new special air defence identification zone over the East China Sea. Professor Andrew O'Neill is director of the Griffith Asia Institute, and he told Breakfast's Tim Skelton that neither Japan nor China is prepared to take a backward step.
I think Shinzo Abe is one of the last acts of Shinzo Abe in 2013 was to visit the Yasukuni Shrine, which, of course, not just to many Chinese, but also to many South Koreans and, you know, other countries in the region, this is quite an incendiary act. So I think the Japanese Prime Minister's sent a pretty clear signal symbolically that he has no intention of taking a backward step on any of these issues. And I think that the Yasukuni visit confirms that. But what I think is more concerning in relation to the East China Sea dispute and of the Senkaku, the Diaoyu Islands, the air defence identification zone, in a sense, all of those issues that are kind of wrapped up in the Sino-Japanese rivalry is not so much that both sides have an intention to go to war. I don't think either side has an intention to go to war, and certainly the United States, Japan's key ally and, of course, a key trading and investment partner for China. You know, it's a nightmare scenario for Washington, Japan and China going to war. What I think the danger is that both sides will get into a low-level spat and that this will escalate and that both sides will lose control of the escalation process.
Just looking internally at China, China is obviously very focused on its own reform agenda, and they have flagged some significant reforms, including changes to the one-child policy and also reducing state intervention in the economy. How's the implementation of those changes likely to play out?
I think the outcomes of the third plenum, in particular the most recent high-level meeting of the Chinese policy-making elite, the outcomes, the consequences of that are going to emerge over time. We've got signals and the relaxation of the one-child policy, as you say, you know, an increasing commitment, I think, by the government to, you know, to fairly serious and increasingly quite genuine anti-corruption measures. And what I think, you know, the international community really needs to focus on is really supporting Chinese leaders in their domestic economic strategy, and that is, you know, promoting good governance internally, making sure that, you know, anti-corruption measures are pursued and prosecuted, and ensuring that, you know, there's a much more transparent investment climate in China for foreign investment. And I think that's, you know, that's a really important issue, I think, for China's economic development per se, but it's also an important issue for countries like Australia and the United States, you know, in terms of their foreign direct investment strategies. Kim Jong-un, the current leader, has only had a few years prior to the death of his father, Kim Jong-il, in 2011, to sort of situate himself in the power process in North Korea. So what I think we've seen with, I mean, essentially the assassination of his uncle, is an assertion of his role within that power structure in North Korea. And, you know, North Korea is certainly a totalitarian state, but I think the really interesting aspect of all of that is that it's an ongoing leadership, a leadership succession process where, you know, he has to show that he's in control. The way you can do that is through high-level purges and, you know, in a sense, this may well be a case of him exercising his authority in the eyes of the Korean People's Army, the senior figures in the Korean People's Army, to shore up his power with the military. You know, it's a way of you know, really demonstrating he's committed to grasping the opportunity of leadership by purging his own uncle. I mean, and that I think is quite significant in itself. Your broader question about where we go from here in terms of North Korea, look, what I think we'll see in 2014 is pretty much, unfortunately, a continuation of the status quo, which is that North Korea will, you know, undertake high-level risky behaviour. So I think we'll certainly see at least one more nuclear test from North Korea this year. We will probably see at least one more crisis this year, probably manufactured by the regime in Pyongyang, again with a view to asserting its, you know, its authority in Northeast Asia. The key question there, of course, whether that escalates into something more serious.
So I suppose just to finish in some ways where we began, and in Japan there are signs that the popularity of the Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is waning now. His party took a hit in the polls following their information security bill. And there are also ongoing concerns about the situation at the Fukushima nuclear plant. Is it fair to say the honeymoon is over for Mr. Abe?
Yeah, look, I think that's a good reading, and I think we tend to lose sight of the fact that the popularity of leaders, or popularity of leaders generally, is determined usually by domestic issues. And for Shinzo Abe, you know, the key test for him, the key commitment for him was economic reform and economic progress. You know, I think the jury's still out on whether Abenomics has worked. Clearly, the Japanese economy is making some progress, but again, it's quite patchy. The underlying kind of growth of the Japanese economy is still very sluggish, as we know. The risk is, I think, that, like, you know, quite often, you know, we look at China and you know, the argument is that if the economics isn't so rosy for policymakers in China, then, you know, they'll try and play the nationalist card in terms of foreign policy and international relations. And, you know, I hope certainly that Shinzo Abe isn't seeking to play the nationalist card with the visit to Yasukuni domestically in order to offset the lack of success in domestic economic policy, because I think that would be quite dangerous. And I think what we've seen is the United States sending a very clear signal to Japanese policymakers not to escalate any dispute, to play a kind of low-profile role, to really try and be conciliatory towards China. But I think from the US point of view, and I think we saw this with the response of the State Department to Abe's Yasukuni visit, was disappointment, in the sense that this is going to make it more difficult now to build bridges with not just China, but also South Korea, other countries in Southeast Asia. So I think the risk is that Japan may become increasingly isolated in the region. And as we know, historically, that's not a good thing.
That's Professor Andrew O'Neill, Director of the Griffith Asia Institute, speaking to Summer Breakfast's Tim Skelton. It's 8:28 past 8.